even though it was a collection of different assets that had been put together over time, they were actually really good assets, probably somewhat undermanaged, in that there was a huge opportunity to transform the business, which is exactly what we've done.
Totally. I think that part of the role, I think, of events like a Go Private is to shake up the status quo and extract the true essential opportunity in a business.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute an advertisement. Views expressed are those of the individuals and not necessarily the views of Thoma Bravo or its affiliates. Thoma Bravo funds generally hold interest in the companies discussed. This podcast should not be construed as an offer to solicit the purchase of any interest in any Thoma Bravo fund.
Welcome to Thoma Bravo's Behind the Deal. I'm Thoma Bravo Managing Partner Holden Spate, and that was Thoma Bravo Partner Brian Jaffe speaking with Craig Sachs, CEO of Bottom Line. The take private of Bottom Line is an example of a classic Thoma Bravo deal. The company had a solid, highly recurring revenue profile and a highly differentiated business payments network. This was a company we'd been tracking as part of our fintech efforts for more than 15 years, which gave us a differentiated understanding of the business and its markets. Combined with that, strong secular tailwinds were accelerating the move of B2B payments from paper to digital. As with every deal, there were hurdles. The company was misunderstood in the public markets and needed a refreshed, simplified strategy that focused its energy on B2B payments and an assist when it came to focusing on growth and profitability. Fortunately, as a firm, we already had a strong history and a great relationship with Craig Sachs, whom we quickly realized was an ideal CEO candidate to lead Bottom Line through a market that was ripe for disruption. Brian and his team played their hand perfectly. They enabled us to buy the business at a great price, and in 18 months, we've tripled the EBITDA. And that's just the beginning. So today, you'll hear everything that went on behind the deal from Brian Jaffe, the deal lead and partner at Thoma Bravo, followed by his conversation with Bottom Line CEO, Craig Sachs.
Hi, I'm Brian Jaffe. I've been with Thoma Bravo for just about 10 years. I'm a partner in our flagship fund. And today on Behind the Deal, we'll be discussing our Bottom Line take private. Bottom Line is a really interesting business in the B2B payment space. It's actually a company that's been around for a really long time, originally founded in 1989 and then went public in 1999. And so it was a public company for over 20 years by the time we ended up taking it private. And the business back then, its core focus was kind of ahead of its time. So if you go back and look at the original S-1 from 1999, they really talk about digitizing B2B payments. So back then, they were very ahead of their time. And ultimately, what they're trying to create is like the Zelle or the MasterCard or Visa of business payments. Bottom Line really stood out to us in the market for having really the best position in AP automation for the enterprise. So if you look at that AP automation market, there are players down at the low end that really focus on SMBs. There are some players that focus on the middle market. And then Bottom Line really focused on this enterprise market, which really has a lot of complexity and tons of volume and still a lot of paper checks being processed for these payers. And so we felt like Bottom Line was still in the early days of gaining market share. A lot of those enterprise customers are either using very manual processes to make their business payments or leveraging their ERP or their banking relationships, but they're not doing it in a very automated or digitized way. And we saw that opportunity with Bottom Line as something that should be a huge growth engine for the business going forward. And the other big thing that we saw in terms of the market and Bottom Line's products was that even though Bottom Line had a lot of different pieces in this B2B payments market, a lot of those pieces hadn't been integrated together from a technology standpoint. Thoma Bravo had been following Bottom Line for a really long time. When I joined in 2014, I started a dialogue and relationship with Rob Eberle, the CEO at the time. And we spent years and years getting to know him and the business. And actually in 2016, we took a pretty hard look at the business, although we decided at that point in time that we weren't quite comfortable or ready to buy it. But we continued to stay in touch, track the performance of the business, keep a really good dialogue with Rob. And then in 2021, there was a number of activist investors that actually came into the stock. And the reason for that is the business at the time, you know, it was seeing its top line revenue decelerate a little bit down to closer to 10% growth. And its margins at the time were in the low double digits, around 12 or 13%. And being a rule of, call it 20 company as like a micro cap stock is just not a very interesting place to be. And these activist investors realized, you know, that there was probably an opportunity for the company to either split off some of the pieces and try to sell them or push them to sell the whole company. And so given our longstanding relationship with Rob and our deep understanding of the business, we were able to actually come in kind of toward the end of 2021 and move very quickly to try and get a deal done. I would say this one is maybe a little bit unique in terms of the length of time, but this is exactly what we do. Even if there isn't necessarily a deal to be done today, what we love to do is build relationships and dialogues with companies that we have a ton of respect and admiration for in markets that we like a lot, knowing that at some point in time, there may be a deal to do. And this was a great example of that. And I think the fact that we had such a great relationship with Rob and that we had such a deep understanding of the company, that actually gave us a huge competitive advantage relative to a few others that were looking at the deal at the same time as us. There were definitely some hurdles like any deal. I'd say with bottom line in particular, one of the big hurdles in the deal was that Rob had come to us and basically said, hey, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm probably not going to be your CEO for this 4 or 5 year journey. I'm certainly not going to, you know, step out tomorrow and leave you guys in a lurch here, but you should just know that we're going to have to figure out a succession plan. And there wasn't really an obvious internal candidate. So we knew coming into the deal that we were going to have to solve this very specific, very important leadership issue. And that's a little bit different for us in terms of how we normally operate. We have a very long history of partnering with existing management teams and not changing them out. In this situation, it was totally fine because Rob was very upfront with us from the beginning, and we knew we were going to have to solve this issue. And during our diligence process, we were working with a market consulting firm to really help us better understand the size of the market, the growth in the market, bottom line's competitive positioning in all the different markets that they operate in. And that particular consultant happened to be working with an operator that we knew, and his name was Craig Sachs. And that actually was really interesting for us because we were starting to think about potential CEO replacement candidates. And Craig was certainly on that list. And then he showed up to help us with the diligence. So he got to really deeply understand the bottom line business through that process. We obviously got to know him super well. And when we signed the deal, we turned around pretty quickly and said, hey, Craig, is this something you might be interested in running? And he was very excited about the opportunity. The only issue is that we signed the deal in December of 21, but we weren't going to be able to close until about May of the following year, as we had to go through all the different regulatory processes to get closed. And you know, in private equity land, that's a very long time to have to sit on your hands. And knowing that Rob was ultimately going to transition out, we went to him and said, hey, we've got an idea. What if you bring on Craig as like your chief operating officer? Let him work with you. You can mentor him. He can get underneath the business and really understand it between that sign and close period. And then when we close, instead of having to go through that process 5 or 6 months later, he can basically step in as CEO. You can step down as part of your retirement plan. And it would just be a really seamless transition for the business and for the employees. And to Rob's credit, he was super supportive of that idea. He took it to his board. He needed to get the public company board of directors to approve this idea, which they ultimately did. Craig became the chief operating officer of the company really in early 2022. We closed in May. We made the transition where Craig stepped in and became CEO, and we were off to the races. And that really gave us a 6 month head start on the investment, which is just incredibly valuable. Craig really is one of our strongest leaders and best operators, I think, across the portfolio. The first time we really got to know Craig deeply was when he was working with us on the diligence of the deal. And in the final weeks leading up to signing the deal, that's always the most intense time. You're scrambling to get all your work done, to move faster than your competitors in the process. And there was a point in time, actually, where we had the company under exclusivity for 7 days. You know, 7 days is not a very long time to finish your work. And so we were basically having to do diligence calls around the clock. And we were based in San Francisco on the West Coast. Craig is based on the East Coast. Some of the members of the management team of Bottomline are based in Europe. And so we were doing calls at all hours of the night. And Craig was showing up on these calls, you know, 2 a.m. his time, grinding through it with us. And so that was, I think, for us, the moment where we realized that he was just totally committed, such a hard worker. And now that we've seen Craig on the other side as our CEO, not surprisingly, that has completely carried through. And the other thing I would say about Craig is he clearly has a strong following. And I think that's always a good sign of any operator, particularly a CEO. So as he's gotten started and really dove into the business, he's brought in leaders from his past life that, you know, had great opportunities where they were, but really wanted to come to Bottomline and work with us and with Craig because of the relationships that they had built over many years. And so because of that, you know, we're now fortunate to have a really strong leadership team around Craig as well. Bottomline acquired Nexus pretty quickly after we closed the deal. So we closed our take private in May of 2022, and we turned around and really working hand in hand with the management team, identified Nexus as a really strategic acquisition target and got that deal signed in the summer of 22 and then closed shortly thereafter. And this is something at Thoma Bravo that we really like to do, which is both helping our companies build really strategic positions in their markets through M&A and doing it very quickly with the balance sheet capacity that we create from all the operational changes. And the other big opportunity for the company is we are putting together the pieces in a much more strategic, coherent way. And I'll give Craig a lot of credit. He's been really taking charge on that initiative. But having a much tighter technical integration between all the products, cleaning up a lot of the legacy tech debt that existed for years and years, and unlocking revenue opportunity and really simplifying and streamlining the business as he does it. So we couldn't be more excited about the future growth opportunity for Bottomline and where the business is going from here. Up next, my conversation with Craig Sachs, CEO of Bottomline.
Craig, good to see you.
Hey, Ron, good to see you too.
We had a board meeting yesterday, so I guess it's good that you decided to still come back. We didn't scare you off.
Yesterday's was a good board meeting.
So. That's true. When the numbers are going up, it makes things a lot easier.
Absolutely. I don't want to come to board meetings when the numbers aren't going up, but it's all good.
That's right. We're super excited to have you here and to talk about Bottomline and what's been a really fun partnership and investment, and really appreciate all your leadership here. If you could give us a short elevator pitch on Bottomline and its mission, that would be great.
Yeah, of course, Brian. So thank you. So I always test this when I tell my friends and family what I do, because otherwise it doesn't make sense and it just sounds like quite an esoteric thing. But essentially, Bottomline is all about helping companies pay each other. So if a company needs to pay another company, we've got the products and the networks, the payment networks that enable companies to make those payments or to receive those payments, and then to actually manage the cash flows. And the reason this is really important is, as we always say, cash flow is the lifeblood of any business. And anything that can make cash flows more efficient and safer and quicker is going to really be helpful just to keep the whole cogs of commerce turning. And so it's a really important thing, we believe, where we have an opportunity to help the wheels of business in the US, in Europe, and in fact, in Asia and around the world, just turn more smoothly and more quickly.
Maybe before we dive into the company in a little more detail, let's bring everybody into the months leading up to the deal getting signed. There was obviously a lot of activist pressure on the company, and you were actually able to come in as part of our diligence process to help us better understand the company's products and the market opportunity and the growth. What was it like working on that side? What did you see in terms of initial thoughts on Thoma Bravo and how we were operating, and then also maybe your initial impressions of the business.
Yeah, look, that was a real fortuitous opportunity and gift, really. It was being able to participate in the process from the outside in and to see how Thoma Bravo thinks about making an investment and what you guys valued, and just to be able to look at the business objectively. Because I actually think that's really one of the most important things that organizations like Thoma Bravo bring to a company, is you look at it objectively and you ask the hard questions without emotion, without rationalization or anything else. And that was really helpful. So the fact that I was able to participate, not as an insider, but as an outsider through the deal process, really gave me an opportunity to see the business from the outside perspective and to see the opportunity in the business, not colored by trying to sell it or to dress it up in any way, but to really understand what is underneath the opportunity and why it is such a great opportunity. And bottom line is a fantastic opportunity, but at the time it was quite hard to understand. It was a collection of somewhat related assets that weren't coherently packaged and described. And therein lay a lot of the opportunity in the business. And going through that diligence process and working with the Thoma Bravo team was very helpful to bring real clarity to the essential opportunity and to what really mattered and where we could turn the dial quite quickly and have a big impact on the performance and value of the business. And quite frankly, where we needed to be more disciplined and focused. Being able to spend that time for a few months looking in and participating in the debate and the discussion and the evaluation was really constructive, and I think gave us an opportunity for an incredibly fast start once the transaction actually closed.
So Bottom Line was founded in 1989, went public in 1999, 10 years later, as a hot fintech business back then, and really was public ever since until we took the company private a few years ago. Maybe talk a little bit about the history of the company in terms of how you understand it.
Yeah. 1989, I was still a teenager and I met my future wife. So it was a good year. Also a good year to start the company. So Bottom Line, people often ask, what is it? Where does the name come from? Because it's a great name for a company that's involved in business payments. I love it. Bottom Line, the company's bottom line, all of those good things. So I love the brand and it's fortuitous. But where it really came from is that in the 80s, paying by check was still a big thing in the world of business. And people wrestling with, how do you make payments more efficient when check is the dominant way to pay? And obviously paper check is slow and it's, you know, risky and what have you. And people were building solutions to optimize the check payment process. And one of the things that Bottom Line did when it was founded was to say, well, how do we make the production and distribution of checks better? And so they created solutions that would print checks. And we, at the time, had a check printing solution and help you manage the whole check process and flow. And the bottom line referred to the account number that you print at the bottom of a check. So we would distribute blank checks, just the basic paper pre-printed, but without the check details. And then we would print the check details, including the account details at the bottom line. And so that's where the name of the company came from. And so in 1989... that was really important. And in fact, the surprising thing, particularly in the US, the world of checks still persists and is actually one of the big reasons we have this opportunity. The US is such a huge economy. There's, what, over $30 trillion of business payments each year. And we believe about half of those are still made by check. And so our mission in life is to say, how do we make that a better experience? Because checks are slower. You know, it takes the physics limited. You can only fly a check across the country so fast. It can only move at the speed of a jet, whereas an electronic payment moves at the speed of light and is instantaneous, for example. And so we continue this journey of digitalizing business payments, bringing efficiencies to the party, making sure that they're secure, and taking the immense cost that is associated with paying by check or paying in a more inefficient way with our new solutions and this continued transformation. And if you convert that market opportunity of trillions and trillions of dollars of business spend that hasn't been optimized in the realm of payments, as far as consumer payments have been optimized in our countries, you actually have this immense disruptive market opportunity, which is really what Bottom Line's all about. How do we contribute to making the world of business payments and cash management more efficient and faster and safer at scale. And out of that, companies get all sorts of benefits. And of course, we get to participate in the benefits by providing a value-adding service.
Yeah, I think it's so cool how the company originally started focused on helping businesses print checks, and then over time has completely reinvented itself to basically disrupt that market and now move everything closer and closer to full digitization.
Yeah. It is actually quite ironic that we started with something that we're now trying to destroy, but the market wants us to destroy it. I had a meeting with one of the very senior guys in one of the big banks we work with, and we were talking about this whole marketplace. And from his perspective, one of his number one business priorities is the removal of paper from the business payments process. And I think the important thing is it's not just about the physical check and the payment itself. Business payments are a complicated process from beginning to end, because it's about reconciling the invoice and the purchase order and the delivery note and making sure that those things are lined up, that you're only paying what you should be paying for and so on. And it is then also about taking it through a whole authorization process. You know, I don't have to speak to a lot of people before I make a payment at home. Maybe it's a discussion between my wife and I. But in a big company, there are a whole lot of people who need to look at a payment and say, yes, I agree, we've received the goods and I agree we can pay it and I agree it's lined up with the legal contract and the boss must say yes and the boss's boss must say yes and so on. And so there's this whole convoluted and very complicated workflow that is necessary to ensure that you only pay for what you're supposed to pay for and that you do it in a managed and a safe way. And so that's a complex flow and we help with that whole flow. And then specifically for checks themselves, you're totally right. Someone has to go to the mailbox or the lockbox and collect the check. Someone's got to read it. Someone's got to connect it to what it came from. Someone's got to figure out who sent it. Someone's got to scan it. Someone's got to make sure it's deposited. And then someone's got to go and capture the fact that it's been paid into the ERP system. And so there's this whole process. Whereas enter a company like Bottomline, and the payment arrives electronically. All the data that you need to do all of that reconciliation and matching arrives with it. And, you know, when you're properly integrated, it automatically gets posted in the right place. You go from a process that involves the physical transportation of a piece of paper, if you're still sending a paper check, through to the whole management of the reading, the scanning, the reconciliation, et cetera, to something that comes through the system as quickly as a computer can push it through. And the cost differential is massive. People talk about processing a check costing tens, if not hundreds of dollars for some of the more complex processes because it's so manual and needs so much management compared to what a truly digitized business payments process is. And that comes back to some of the comments I was making early on. By doing this, we are really oiling the machine of business payments. You don't wait days to get your money. You don't spend days trying to figure out where it belongs and which cost center to code it against. You get to see it, you get to forecast it because you see when we send it and so on. And so the whole management of your cash flow is just optimized. Your management of the money flowing through your business and the management of your ability to then pay your suppliers in turn is just so enhanced that it is value adding. And if you look at a bunch of market research that has been done by big payment companies and academics, you can noticeably connect the level of improving the digitization of payments to improvements in the macroeconomics of a country. GDPs improve with every percentage point of digitizing payments. That's been proven time and time again. And so the value proposition is for individual companies, but the value proposition is also for countries and for markets as a whole. This is where I start geeking out on payments actually battering and changing the world. I really do believe that what we do as a company adds value to businesses and to the economies and the communities within which we operate.
So I like to think in that last week leading up to when we signed the deal, I joke that in that exclusivity period, we had 7 days to diligence 7 businesses, basically. And it was pretty fast and furious. And you were a huge part of that process and helping us get comfortable with the business. What was that like for you? You were on diligence calls literally at some points at 2 a.m. And I look back on that very fortunate that you were still willing to work with us after that process, but maybe tell us a little bit about that.
If I had any illusions about what it would be like to work in a Thoma Bravo company after the fact, that certainly gave me a good sense. No, I'm teasing. That whole intense week was actually really good, because I think what people get wrong is that one can storm in and do this and truly understand the nature of a business in 1 week. And particularly something like bottom line, as you point out, which is essentially seven different independent lines of business, almost like a federation holding company. And I think that one of my key takeaways from that was that week was actually a culmination of you guys, I know, watching the company for two decades and really building a real good understanding of the industry, of the underlying drivers of what this business is, of its market and its potential. So you guys have been thinking about this for a long time, which I think actually enables you to be very decisive and very focused and quite intense when the moment is right to make a move. And so that week, while it was incredibly busy and we were, you know, really studying seven different businesses and assessing the market and talking to management and debating what we thought and scratching in the data and working these very long hours, was actually built up on a foundation of real insight and understanding of what the underlying hypothesis and opportunity is in the marketplace. And I think that enabled Thoma Bravo to make a good decision and to act quite decisively. And I think my main takeaway from that was just how structured the process was, how incredibly disciplined, you know, Thoma Bravo is in that process, how unemotional you are. You don't believe anyone's propaganda, you know, and you're able to evaluate things clearly and then make a call. And in this case, you guys made a great call. I think the other thing that struck me is that it's not two guys in a room and a cup of coffee. It's actually an ecosystem of people that are working. If I think about those 2 weeks as that last week, that diligence process, it was obviously the consultants working on the market. It was the legal firm. It was the quality of earnings auditors. It was big team from Thoma Bravo. It was IT due diligence and technology due diligence. You know, no stone was left unturned. And it was actually just amazing to watch this machine that has obviously been honed over decades assess every single aspect of the business, what was important, what was risky, what was exciting, what needed to be taken care of, and then move decisively. And I think everyone was surprised by how quickly you got to the point where you said, we want to go exclusive, we're going to figure this out, we're going to make an offer, and we're going to do a deal. And you guys got it done. And I think it will go down in history as a very good moment in bottom line's, you know, 40 years and ongoing existence.
Yeah, that's really well said. And you were definitely a huge part of that process in the end. And you're right. We had a lot of perspective having watched the company for so long, a lot of built up hypotheses, but you were a big part of helping us bring that all together and get the conviction that this actually, even though it was a collection of different assets that had been put together over time, they were actually really good assets, probably somewhat undermanaged, and that there was a huge opportunity to transform the business, which is exactly what we've done.
I think that part of the role, I think, of events like a go private is to shake up the status quo and extract the true essential opportunity in a business. And after 30 years, I think that bottom line had got stuck in its path, in its approach, in its style. And while that had served it incredibly well in the lead up to this event, there was a real opportunity to step back, take a fresh look at how we did things, and truly transform ourselves for the next era of growth and market success. And so these moments in time, I think, are amazing opportunities to step back, look at a company and yourself objectively and reset. And as I described to my management team, we've got a four-year project. After 35 years, we've now got a four-year project to reset the company for the next 35 years. And that means there are no holy cows, and you tackle every single aspect of the company, you make choices, and you go forward. And a business like Bottom Line, where the fundamentals were so solid, and where the products are so solid and the market opportunity is such an amazing blessing in terms of its size and what you've got to work with, I think it is putting rocket fuel onto this thing. And it was necessary, very helpful. And I think we're going to look back on this era as really important in the long-term journey of the company and, quite frankly, the business payments industry in North America and Europe.
Agreed. The foundation of the business was so solid. And I think that was the piece that we were really trying to understand in diligence. And we give a lot of credit to the former CEO, Rob Eberle, who built the business over a long period of time, but also built I know you've talked a lot about the culture of the company that you stepped into. And we've always found that it's so difficult to change the direction of a culture. And so the fact that you were able to come in and inherit a business that had a really good culture, a group of employees that were really excited and committed and loyal to the company, but to come in with a fresh perspective in partnership with us to start to say, hey, can we do things differently to unlock the growth potential of the company? And that has been really exciting to watch unfold under your leadership.
Yeah, it's been great. It's wonderful joining a company where your biggest problem is picking which market opportunities you go after, not picking which customers you're going to steal from your competitors. And so this is really exciting stuff in terms of the market opportunity. And just to build on the culture thing, Brian, I don't think you can underestimate the power of culture. As a group, I experienced an open-mindedness that led to far less resistance than I could ever have imagined and far less politics than I expected. And in fact, the team really worked with us to give us a go and give us an opportunity. And that enabled us to get a lot done quite radically. You know, and even when it's rough, because there are some bumpy times when you change how an organization works so quickly, the team has given us the benefit of the doubt and embraced the art of the possible versus just being resistant. And it's a very different outcome given that experience than the other way it could have been. And there are real positives to that, not just our ability to rapidly turn the ship, but actually I'm starting to see it come through in other ways. A flexible, curious, open-minded culture is a creative culture. Over the last 18 months, for example, we have created 3 brand new big market offerings, things that didn't exist as an idea 18 months ago. One's already gone live. They thought of it. We built it. We got it into the market and it's generating millions of dollars of revenue 12 months later. We created 2 other exciting market opportunities that are going to be worth tens of millions of dollars in the business payment space in this coming year and the years after. And that is only possible when people are open-minded and creative. And then what we did is we created the opportunity for these different aspects and ideas to come together and to come to fruition. And the value of a good culture is so strong. It enables innovation, it enables alignment, it enables a sense of camaraderie. It is built around who and what you are. And as you pointed out, bottom line is blessed with a very, very wholesome culture that they spent years and years building and that we've worked very hard to preserve. And I think it's part of the secret sauce of what we're going to become.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for coming on the Behind the Deal podcast. It's been super fun diving into the background of how the deal came together and how you specifically got involved with us and now the company. We're very grateful for your leadership and all the value creation that's happened over the last several years and couldn't be more excited about where the company's going, all the innovation that's happening in the business and the growth to come. So thank you very much.
Great. No, Brian, thank you so much. And thank you for the opportunity. I love talking about what we do. It's very exciting and it's great to just share the story and the message.
Thanks to Craig for sitting down with us today. To learn more about Bottomline and keep up with what they're doing, visit bottomline.com/US. And for more stories that go behind the deal, check out all of our episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to subscribe to Toma Bravo's Behind the Deal to hear new episodes as soon as they drop. If you enjoyed my conversation with Craig, check out our mini-series, Beyond the Deal, for more insights we didn't have time for today. Catch it on YouTube and in this feed next week. I'm Brian Jaffe. Thanks for joining us.
Toma Bravo's Behind the Deal is produced by Toma Bravo in partnership with Pod People. Stay tuned for more stories behind the deal. I'm Holden Spate. Thanks for listening.
Certain statements about Thoma Bravo made by portfolio company executives are intended to illustrate Thoma Bravo's business relationship with such persons rather than Thoma Bravo's capabilities or expertise with respect to investment advisory services. Portfolio company executives were not compensated in connection with their podcast participation, although they generally receive compensation and investment opportunities in connection with their portfolio company roles, and in certain cases are also owners of portfolio company securities and or investors in Thoma Bravo funds. Such compensation and investments subject podcast participants to potential conflicts of interest.